So does this have second part two have theme music too?
It should. Oh, there we go.
Look me in the eyes and tell me one more time.
This is a song I'm playing because this was a song that I sang to the cat when we were together. Mm-hmm. It's me and my girl in girl and me in 93, but I was singing, it was just me and Diz We, us against the world.
Diz We.
Yeah.
Rest in power.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So part two. Before 2018.
Right.
You had some things, like some very 17 things to ask me.
No.
So this is kind of the last opportunity.
Right, because there's only 2 hours left in 2017.
Sure.
And 2017 was a difficult year for many people. We both acknowledge that.
I agree.
I will say that my 2017 was great.
Mine was like a mix. Mm-hmm. I think my early to mid 2017 was fine.
Right.
And my last part of 2017 was horrendous.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of the thing I've been going on a lot, which is like, when your butt's leaking poop, mm-hmm. you just don't care about much else.
Right.
Your world becomes very small.
your world becomes like, how does my underwear not be stained?
Yeah.
How do I get to work on time?
How am I going to go to a job interview if I'm basically slowly crapping my pants all day?
Right.
So your world becomes very small, but I don't really know how you increase the size of that world. So like, a lot of 2017 stuff that was big for a lot of people wasn't big for me, mm-hmm. but I also make no apologies for that because I'm like, I don't know, you try walking around with half a load in your pants and see how it goes.
Your 2017 was also bad, but it was very particular as opposed to general.
Yes. I mean, it was definitely...
Like, the world around you could be burning, but your world was... your personal world was also burning.
It's kind of like, you know, there's that comic with the dog who's in the room on fire and is like, this is fine. Mm-hmm. Except imagine there's also a fire inside that dog's pants.
Right.
And the dog is more concerned with that fire than the fire in the room around him. And you're like,
the dog is kind of unable to grapple with the room on fire because the fire is much closer.
I got to first put out this fire that is localized inside my pants.
Exactly.
Anyway.
But I kind of wanted to ask because, you know, sometimes the show in the recent episode, mostly because of like the passing of Diz We, again, mm-hmm. rest in power,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to take it in more positive direction.
Sure.
All right. And this is going to be a challenge.
Okay.
All right. So I want you to pick Helpful Snowman,
uh-huh.
Peter's best 3 days of 2017.
Oh, my God.
Like a highlight reel of the best 3 days of 2017. Like the best... They don't have to be like physical days. Maybe they could be like experiences, like the best 3 days of 2017, like the highlights, not lowlights, not worst things, because like people are really good at coming up with how 2017 was terrible.
Sure.
But like things in 2017 where you're like, this was a great day. Like I enjoyed today. Today felt good.
Okay. This could be challenging, but I'm going to do my best.
All right.
Okay. There's one specific day that I remembered. It was after Cicely passed away.
Okay.
Because I remember this day where I was with Cassie in her apartment in Cicely, and we basically did nothing all day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were laying on her bed, all three of us, and just, like, I napped a couple times on and off, and it was, like, really a nothing special kind of day.
Right. This is not in no particular order, by the way, so...
Yeah, and I think, like, to anyone outside of it, it would probably look very unspecial.
So, but to me, Cicely and Cat Heaven, do not strike us down for this not being number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not an order. This is an order that I'm thinking of them right now.
Right.
And there may be days that, like, later I'd be like, oh, fuck, that was definitely the best.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those days, like, I read this poem at Alex's wedding.
Right.
And it was basically, it's this poem, I think it's called Summer Kitchen by Donald Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this poem about kind of a very mundane evening and how sort of a mundane regular evening where you're just together with people that you love is very magical, mm-hmm. in a way that you don't wish for until it's gone. And so I think that that day has taken on that sort of magical, that was our normal.
Right.
You know, and like, it wasn't totally normal. I mean, like, I'm not good at like napping. I'm not good at, I don't have a lot of days where I just relax, even on the weekends and stuff like that. And it was just a day where I didn't have much to do. And it was just very, it was great. Like, I just spent the whole day with people that I care about and not really feeling accountable to anything.
You didn't have anywhere to be. You didn't have anything to do.
Nope.
And so you just said, I mean, that's like, that's really, you know, what the nicest part is about like most holidays and things like that, where you don't have anything scheduled. Like when you take a vacation and you can say like, it's part of the temptation like that you have when you get older, where you're not like, I got to go see something. I got to go do something. It's the, I want to sit around and I want to do nothing.
Yeah.
All day.
Okay, I'd put a contender up there of, previously mentioned, we went to Memphis to see Lucero, right?
Okay.
And we had a super fun time. Like, right. We go to Tennessee, we get in Memphis, we go to Nashville, we saw Patton Oswalt in Nashville, we go on to Dollywood, which was, like, a lot more like Disney World than I thought it would be. Like, it was, I highly recommend it. Right. If you like theme parks, you gotta go to Dollywood.
It's like
it's great.
Like it's, so it's like Disney World, but a little more country.
Yeah, but like
not much.
The
but
quality
like
of it is super high.
Yeah, it's not like country as in a bad way. Just like that's just a little more twang on it. Just a little bit.
Yeah, it's like a little bit like if you mixed Graceland with Disneyland or something like that. But I mean, I think it's of a much higher quality than I expected. And then I felt kind of guilty because I was like, why did I think this would be some shitty hillbilly shit? Because it was amazing.
Right.
So then, and then we went back to Memphis. So the day of the concert, we went to like the Civil Rights Museum, which was pretty good. We went to, we saw the ducks. There's like this hotel where ducks live in a penthouse. They ride the elevator down.
And they go down into the fountain?
Yeah, they get in the fountain, swim around, and then get back in the elevator and go back up.
Right.
You know, we're doing this. But Cassie was feeling pretty sick that day. And then, so I was there with Nicanor and Val as well. And so Nicanor and Val were fine. Cassie was sick and we were downtown and Cassie was basically like, I don't really want to walk around. It was raining, you know, and she was just like, I just don't feel good and whatever. So I ended up having to take her back to the hotel and Nicanor and Val hung out downtown. And then I went out and like got her some soup and stuff like that and came back and she was kind of like trying to recharge because the show was like that night. So I was like, maybe you should like just rest at the hotel and then see if you feel like going to the show. And she's like, I'm going. But I was like, well, let's take you back to the hotel and see if you can rally. So then I get food and stuff and I go back to the hotel. And then right about when I'm getting there, Nicanor and Val are like, hey, will you come and pick us up and take us to the venue? Because like they could go to the venue, but they had to go with me because the tickets are in my name.
Right.
So they couldn't get in or anything. And there was like, you know, openers and all that. And I was like, God damn it. You know, because basically I'm just like driving all over creation here and not enjoying anything. And like Val and Nicanor are out at like a couple bars downtown. And they're like pretty drunk when I pick them up and having a great time. Cassie is sick in bed. And Peter's just like, Peter was vacation dad that day.
Right.
You know, where he's just like taking care of everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this like moment of growth because I'm like driving to pick up Nicanor and Val, and I was just like all agitated. And I was like, you know what? They were like total troopers because they hung out downtown with no ride and stuff for like 5 hours.
Right.
And I was like, I can't, how mad can I be at them? Because they want to go to this. Because here's the other thing, it was super inconvenient timing because I was like, I'm going to have to go pick them up, take them to the venue, go back to the hotel, get Cassie, and then like a half hour later, go to the show, right? So it was just like, the timing was terrible. But I was like, they were troopers about it. And like, how long are they supposed to hang out downtown by themselves and be like, okay, let's go to the show?
It's at some point, like you have to sort of think like, if you showed up with them, like after 5 hours, if they're a little drunk, that's fine.
Yeah, and it wasn't about them being drunk. It was about, like, I was just like, oh, they're having such a good time, and I am not. And then, you know, and with Cassie, I was like, the moment of growth was, it's not like she chose to be sick. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's be honest. Would you rather feel sick like she feels right now or have to drive people around like you are right now? And I was like, I mean, I've probably got the better end of the stick. My end of the stick isn't the best.
Right.
But it's better than hers. And like, she's also trying to like soldier through mm-hmm. and like wants to go to the show and whatever. And I just had this like sort of discussion with myself and came out the other side feeling like, you know, everything is okay and like everybody's doing their best. Mm-hmm. And it just felt, it made me feel good because I felt like, you know what, like what's happening for me right now really isn't bad. Like, this is fine.
There's a lot of people who are there like in support of you. Like,
yeah,
Cassie probably likes Lucero, but she would not have flown out to Memphis to see them.
No, I don't think anyone would have if I hadn't initiated it.
Yeah, and so like there's a lot of people there who are like, no one would be there if it wasn't like because you were interested in that.
Yeah, and I think that like I felt very connected to my friends mm-hmm. and was like, I felt very lucky to have a strong group of friends and people I get along with so well. And that I got to a place where I felt happy to do these things for like my friends and my partner and to like be going to the show. I was like, this is one of the all time better days of your life. Mm-hmm. So just enjoy it. And I did. So it kind of like turned around for me. Okay. There's like a sound outside.
Yeah, I hear that.
I was like,
too.
Isn't that like a high-pitched whine? Anyway, I think it turned out to be like a day that could have been really bad, but actually turned out to be really good and also was like a personal development day.
There's like a lot of growth that happens. There's like a...
It was.
There's a sort of bad part and then a good part.
Yeah, I think so. God, and then one more?
Yeah. I know, you got to pick out three good things of 2017, which is hard for a lot of our audience.
I mean, there were a lot of good things in 2017, to
Tweet
be honest.
Your good like, moments at help to at Helpful Snowman or send them into helpfulsnowman.com.
I mean, I think that, like, I had a lot of fun at your wedding.
Ooh.
I think it was like a... But I wouldn't claim that for myself.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because I feel like I had fun, but it wasn't my...
No, it's fair to claim someone moment. Else's like wedding day is a good day for you. Like that's fair.
It was just nice to see. Like it just seemed like you were really happy, mm-hmm. and like I think Wilma/Jen was also very happy. Mm-hmm. But I think I have a better. You can both be a little inscrutable in some ways. Mm. I think, but I think that like I have enough of a bead on you to be like, oh, this is like. Really, he's really happy right mm-hmm. now. So that was a pretty amazing thing. And like your wedding too, there was like a certain amount of magic to it in that like you guys got married at the courthouse and you were going to have this one judge, but then this other judge kind of was like, oh, let's switch around because this other judge is the only one who speaks Spanish.
Right.
I think you were one of the few couples who was not Spanish only at right. the thing.
We, just for context, like we got married at the courthouse in Phoenix, mm-hmm. And a lot of people who get married at the courthouse, like they kind of needed, it was clear from people who were around, like there were people who, you know,
yeah,
didn't have a lot of options for weddings.
Yeah.
And so like we were one of the few couples who were like, we'll take English. We're good.
Yeah.
And,
so then they got this judge who was like, I thought he was really fun mm-hmm. and he seemed to be really like enjoying doing the weddings.
Right.
And so I was like really happy about that.
And that's the thing, like a lot of judges, like they'll do weddings and like most judges do weddings for like extra money.
Yeah.
Like it's the kind of thing, like imagine the thing that you would do at your job for like an extra maybe $30.
Right. Like if they were like, you could stay a couple hours after on Fridays and do notarizations.
And this is like, yeah, like you could stay in a couple hours after work on your weekend to do yeah. like a couple of, you know, for not very much money.
No.
And then do this thing. So like either
you'd
want
to
do it.
You have to love it to an extent because like, to, like the money is yeah. not great.
Yeah. Like the money's not great. So either you have to do it like really fast or you have to be like, you're just kind of into this thing. Like this is one of the things that But then again, like, I can see, like, if you're a judge in particular.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the things where someone, like, you as a librarian.
Yeah.
Would be like, if you could run book club, like, of a book that you genuinely love with people who had all read it.
Yeah.
And really wanted to talk about it.
Sure.
But the condition was you had to add on an extra hour to your week.
Right. And you're like, hmm.
You'd be like, yeah.
Another work hour versus, yeah. Like, well, and so then... That part was really great. Mm-hmm. Like, I just thought he was great, and I thought it was, like, kind of a fortuitous thing that he ended up being the person who did it.
Right.
And it was like, memorable.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I guess I just felt like... I think that you seem like a fairly happy person. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't qualify you as a depressed individual.
No.
Or, like, a... dark individual. Like, I think you can go to that dark place and have fun with it.
Right.
But I don't think of you as someone who has that darkness. However, this seemed to be like an exceptional moment for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was pretty fun. And also, like, I think it went relatively well with, like, you know, we were bringing together, like, our siblings who are the product of our dad and stepmom and our mom. You know, and that's like a kind of a problematic
there's blend. There are tensions there.
There's tension there.
Right.
But it went fine, mm-hmm. you know, and like, I don't know. It was just like, it seemed.
There's like a bit of like a nice. Lot of people like trying to overcome or like look past various, you know, little bits.
Yeah. It was like a very imperfect situation that I think turned out really well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good.
And you got some good tacos.
I did get, yeah, I had some really good fucking Mexican food. It was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. That's up there. That's way up there.
And it makes you, it'll get into my second question.
Oh, okay. For later well, on. But I don't know if that's my top three for sure.
Okay.
Because there's also, there's a couple others that are like in there.
All right.
I had a pretty good time. We went and saw Lucero at the Botanic Garden. And that was a BYOB picnic situation.
That seems like that would be better than Tennessee, like just in terms of seeing Lucero.
It was pretty fucking amazing. Cause like,
wait, I have a follow-up question to okay. this one. All right. So it's at the Botanic Gardens in yeah. Denver, right?
Yes.
Under what rationale did you not invite our mother?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I think because I knew I was going to be shit-faced.
Oh, okay.
Because here's the thing. It was BYOB. And, like, right. I figured it out what happened. So, like, when you get there, you realize, oh, this is like a summer concert series. So what a lot of people probably do is buy season tickets.
Right.
And just come to whatever.
They just, yeah, okay.
And then there was also the Lucero crowd there.
Right.
So I brought in a backpack that was basically 45 pounds of beer and liquor.
Okay.
I mean, it was so heavy.
So it's like, this would barely get on a plane as a check it bag.
There's no way.
Like this,
they
this
would
is
let
like
you
pushing,
check that heavy of a bag.
Like, no, like you can check a
oh,
bag.
A check
up,
bag
like
yes.
a check bag. Like you could check it as up to 65 pounds. So like,
it's basically like, imagine taking a large backpack and
right.
filling it with liquid.
I've done that.
How heavy it would be.
Yeah.
That's what I was carrying. And like, oh. we walked like two blocks and I was sweating, you know, because I was like, this is so heavy. And, you know, because it was like, let's put as much beer as we can. But it was like, I went with a fun crew
mm-hmm.
and we had a good time. I ate some nachos and probably looked like fucking Kurt Russell in Death Proof. Just like making a mess and people looking at me like, what the fuck?
Because I imagine the Botanic Gardens concert series is more like they have a very nice bottle of wine.
Yes. There was
like
a
baguettes
people,
and then like cheese.
There was literally a couple there who was having a picnic where they had like a little wooden table with like a little cheese plate and, you know, sausage that they like cut up themselves
mm-hmm.
and like laid it all out and stuff, which I, and from my concert experience, I'm like, how did they let you bring a fucking knife in here?
Right. Like, that's also true.
I've never like, been to a concert where they would allow you to bring a fucking knife.
In fairness, like they pull out like a cheese knife as opposed to like a regular knife. Like
this was a real knife because it was like they cut like sausage with it.
Oh shit! Like, but so it was like they pulled out like a real knife. Like this is a real.
It was a serious knife. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, you could kill someone with that knife. You could do a lot worse than trying to kill someone with that knife.
If you can cut through like a sausage cleanly with that knife.
Yes. Then... I had no doubt. There was a couple sitting across the way who we were all kind of making fun of because they had this little like wooden table set up that had like little candles on it.
Oh.
Like it was like a real picnic-y situation.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, what do you think you're seeing right now?
See, like this is the kind of thing like they were prepared for like Van Morrison.
Yes.
Where it's like, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance. Oh, I probably own the Van Morrison estate a lot of money for that. I imagine like Van Morrison is the kind of artist who has like really good lawyers.
I feel like they, you know, it's like, listen, I've had to listen to this at pretty much every wedding I've ever been to.
Right.
Like, give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
But probably like one of the highlight moments was the song that started the last show, I Can Get Us Out of Here Tonight. I was like, well, I'm drunk enough that when the next song comes up, I'm going to crack another beer, double fist it, and go running down to the front of the stage where there were only like a dozen people.
Right. Because
there was a small contingent of Lucero crowd, the Botanic Gardens crowd.
Okay.
And so I was like, when that happens, I'm going to go running down. Mm-hmm. And so the next song was that song. And I was like, all right, peace out. I'm going to see you later. And as Cassie described it, I go like running down with my arms over my head. Now, okay.
Like,
I'm trying to think of the right way. Okay. Let me tell you how I perceived it.
Okay.
I am calmly walking down this little basic. It's like the amphitheater is set in the bottom of this sort of 360 degree bowl.
Right.
That's squared off. But like the stage is at the bottom of it.
Yes.
So then it's like sloping grass going away from it on all sides. And at the corners, there are like these cement gutters.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like going down the cement gutter. I get to the bottom and a security guy is like, you can't go this way. And I was like, what do you mean? Because I thought he was saying I couldn't go to the front of the stage. But there were people dancing around over there. And this wasn't like a seated event.
Right.
You just like picnic on the grass. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you can't go this way. And I was like, well, can I go like up and around? And he's like, yes, you can do that. And I like turn and there's these people with like a blanket and they like draw their legs back. Clearly, like what I assumed at the time was, okay, a bunch of people have gone by here. So we know the drill.
Mm-hmm.
So then I run around, I get to the front of the stage. Now, as Cassie described it, and as I later saw on video, I'm running down this cement thing with both my arms over my head, screaming.
I imagine kind of like a Muppet run.
Dancing crazily. Yeah. I mean, it looks like I'm a marionette.
Like, there's like two or three, like you're held up by like three sticks maximum, but there's clearly momentum going to a direction. And really the security guard's job is not so much to like stop you from getting to the stage, but stop you from getting to the stage that quickly.
I think that that's very prescient what you said, because now my interpretation of it after seeing the video and hearing Cassie's thing was like, I think the security guard thought I was going to like rush the stage and belly flop onto the stage. Like I think he was preventing me from like murdering somebody, sort of like Harrison style.
like you were going to like flop on, like,
yes,
you know what he was trying to prevent? He was trying to prevent you from doing like a WWE wrestling entrance into the ring where you,
yes,
like slide onto the stage and then like murder the bass player and,
yes,
jump off,
or like a soy bomb, or right, you know, like some, which I totally was not gonna do. But
if you're the security guard, you're like, this is my, yes, moment. I'm going to stop the soy
And in
bomb.
His defense, I'm like, he did the right thing. Like,
right.
If I saw me coming to the stage in that fashion, I would do the same thing.
It'd be like, I need to slow this down.
And especially in the context of, I mean, he's basically probably there as a total perfunctory, like,
he's
keeping
there,
senior citizens from like
he's there for the series
over.
Like he's there for the series where all his job,
yes,
is to like make sure people like go the right direction, like,
yes,
if they wanted to be in the space.
Yep. He's not doing a lot of, he's not tackling a lot of people.
Right.
Probably no one.
Like
I would guess he's tackled no one in this function.
And part of his job at the Lucero concert, right?
Like, yep.
Part of his job, and it sounds bad, but it's to separate the Lucero fans from the Botanic Gardens people.
I don't think it sounds bad.
And so it's the kind of thing, like, if the Botanic Gardens people, like, went to him, he'd be like, are you sure? Are you sure this is what you want to do? Because look at those people.
Yeah, and, like, let's put it like this. I mean, if shit was going to go down, that was when it was going to happen.
Right.
And if someone had cell phone video of me running to the stage in that fashion, holding two beers above my head, flailing around wildly, and then I jumped on the stage and attacked someone, everyone would be like, where the fuck was the security?
Like, that security guard was going to be like, I was the guy who stopped that, you know, like, yeah. I talked to him at first.
Yes. And so, like,
slow this down.
That guy, and he wasn't like a dick.
Right.
I was confused, but also drunk. So when he was telling me I couldn't go that way, what he was saying was, I think what he was saying is, no, you can't go on stage.
Right.
Which I was like, oh, that's fair. Also, my reinterpretation of the people pushing their legs back was like, this guy is clearly shit-faced and like on a mission.
I don't want to get stepped on.
Yeah. Like, I don't think he's going to make it through our gauntlet of legs. Let's do him a favor.
He is a drunk man with determination.
Yeah.
Like, he's on a mission.
There's nothing that's going to, ain't going to be no stopping him.
Right. Like, so we're not going to be able
to make some fucking room.
I don't want my ankles to be sacrificed to whatever mission this guy has.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was a pretty solid, it was just like a really fun night.
Right.
And it wasn't like a huge night, mm-hmm. but it's like all my good friends were there.
Right.
You know, we had, like, Doug was there, who I don't always see. Nicanor was there. Hanna was there. Val was there. Cassie was there. Peter was there. You know what I mean? It was just, and, like, I'm seeing my favorite band.
Right.
And they played a lot of great songs, and, like, I got to get real close, and I got real shit-faced, but it was, like, a night where you get real shit-faced, but there's, like, no consequence.
Mm.
And you're like, all right. So, I mean, that was pretty great. That's pretty high up there.
Well, that's fair. That's like 3+.
Yeah, definitely.
Because like, if you're not claiming the wedding, that's like 3+.
I think that there was a night. Let's see, good nights, good times.
Well, you're at 3.
Yeah, I'm at like 3+. There was one other one that I was like, oh, this was pretty good too. It's hard to remember, like, early in the year.
Mm.
I mean, okay, let's be serious. I haven't talked about it on here yet, but I just got some news that I got accepted into a workshop with... Oh, I remember what the other thing was.
Okay.
Okay, so we did Santa Rampage this year.
Rampage!
How did you feel about Santa Rampage this year?
Santa Rampage was, like, a very... it was a good event. It felt like it was much more controlled... But not in a bad way.
Less wild.
Less wild, but like, I mean, I respect that, like, I like the early years of Santa Rampage where, like, it was a little bit too nuts.
Yeah.
But also, I like the idea of, like, not throwing up in a parking lot.
Yes.
And also, like, being not, like, not where the Facebook page of Santa Rampage is populated full of people of, like, why did I do this? Like, the first year of Santa Rampage, for those of you who didn't listen a couple of years ago, the first year of Santa Rampage was a bit rough.
I think the first, like, 2 years.
Yeah, like, there was...
People vomited.
Yeah.
Some people cried.
Mm-hmm.
There was some craziness. And then this was the 5th year. And like, this was probably...
This was sedate.
I think this was the second most sedate. I think last year was pretty chill.
Last year was really chill. I think this year was... This year was cold, and I think both were really cold.
Yeah.
And that kind of slowed things down quite a bit.
But let me say this. So I had this gum surgery, so I could not drink.
Right.
And I was like staring down the barrel of sober Santa Rampage.
Yes.
And was like, do I even want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, should I just cancel it? Should I just like package everything and hand it off to people? You know what I mean? And then I was like, no, like, I want to do this because I want my friends to have fun. And, like, that's what the goal of it was all right. along, was, like, for all these other people that I care about to have fun. So I did it anyway. And I did have, like, a pretty good time, even though I was stone sober. Like, I enjoyed it. It was still hard to tell. I thought it'd be easy to tell if other people enjoyed it, but I could not tell. But it seemed like other people had a good time.
It was a good time. Like, Jen, it was her first Santa Rampage.
Yeah.
And to make, if it makes you feel better, she was hungover the next day.
That does make me feel better.
So she was like, you know.
I had a couple people tell me that they were a lot more wasted than I thought they were.
Right.
So that did make me feel perversely better.
There's a little bit of like, there's a, like, enough wildness, like there was enough rampageness, mm-hmm. like to get through there.
Mm-hmm.
People posted their pictures of glitter.
Yeah, there's a lot of glitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like, there's some things I would change for the future. And, like, mostly it would be, like, I would be a little drunk. But I had a good time. And so, like, I think that having a good time at that sober was, like, pretty questionable. And I did. So I felt good about that.
It's a way that, like, as somebody who vomited the first year of Santa Rampage.
Yeah.
Like, I've had to scale back on various years.
Right.
And I realized, like, Santa Rampage is probably it's fun if you are not the drunkest person.
You don't want to be the drunkest person, but you do want to be, like, the third drunkest person.
Yeah, like, that's the goal, is that you want to be, like, you want to be on the list, but not yeah. the list.
But I think it's just, like, fun, and I was kind of, like, I was, like, proud of myself. This is probably also a personal growth good day.
Right.
Because I was, like, do I even want to do it? Because, like, I kind of didn't want to do it because I just felt like I didn't feel very Christmassy because Cassie's gone.
Right.
And she wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Dizzy died, I was just like, I don't like anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was like, you can't drink, I was like, how many nails have to go in this coffin before I can burst out of it?
Right.
But I felt like I overcame, you know. Which sounds, like, really stupid. I'm like, I overcame the fact that I couldn't be shit-faced one night. But
well,
it's like,
you overcame
probably
a lot of other little things, too. Like, the
yeah.
You sort of nailed down, like, what made... You nailed down, like, what made Santa Rampage. Like,
really,
it wasn't
a triumph of the Christmas spirit.
As much as it was... Santa Rampage, like, kind of came out of an idea that living in a small town, like, there wasn't much going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it's sort of like trying yes. to make something happen.
Yeah. Like, people are like, oh, I've heard of them doing this in New York City and stuff.
Right. And I think a lot of it is about the idea of not just trying to build something, but trying to build something where there is nothing. Or like trying to build yeah. something from little. And so this was a year where that was a challenge.
Yeah.
Again, like in the way that
right.
the first
it
was year
difficult.
Was a, the first year was a challenge because it had never been done before. But this
right.
was like a doing the same thing, but with the emotional resources less.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it, because it's like the first time I did it was complicated because you're like trying to get other people on board,
right?
But this year it was complicated because I had to get myself on board.
Yeah, like other people were more on board, like where Jen came out for Santa Rampage,
right?
And so
yeah.
this was the first year where you had somebody who was not blood related to you,
yeah,
like come a long way in order to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, we still have not managed the all Dirk Santa Rampage, where it's like all the siblings
right.
and spouses and significant others are together.
Well, you know, Jenna's now a sibling.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And so, like, we've just never managed one where it's like everybody is here together.
Well, actually, Jenna's your sibling.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, though. Like, last year, it could have worked if you, Alan, and Julia had been here.
Right.
And not Jen.
Mm-hmm.
But now this year, it's like you and Jen and Alan were here and his significant other, but no Julia. It's like we still haven't managed that.
Right.
But someday.
Someday.
But anyway.
Maybe in Oregon.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing, is I was like, maybe I'll just have to get everyone to come out to that.
Mm.
But so, like, I felt good about doing that because it felt very selfless.
Right.
And you're right. Like, I think it was something that...
it was very much in the spirit of Rampage. Like, that was the
yeah.
original spirit. Like, as much as like I felt like there was a tameness to this year's, it was very much in the spirit of the original Rampage.
Yeah, which was like, I think I started it because A, I don't care about Christmas and right. wanted to start a tradition for myself that like made me look forward to Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And B, living where I live, it doesn't have all the things I'd like. But at some point you're like, well, when am I going to be accountable for that?
Right.
Like, what could I do to make the place I live be more like somewhere I'd like to live? Like, I could move somewhere I want to be, or I could make the place where I am sort of more like the place I
want
to be.
You could create the things you want, or you could participate in the things you want.
Exactly. And then, so like, we had this Rampage. I thought it was fun. Everyone, you know, went home and it was a good time. And then I get home and I check my email and I got accepted to a writing workshop with Chuck Palahniuk and Lydia Yuknovich,
mm-hmm.
which is like a 12-week writing workshop in Portland, which is like kind of a dream fulfillment for me. Like,
right.
There's this DVD that came out in like probably the early 2000s, like maybe 2004, called Postcards from the Future. And it was like Chuck Palahniuk giving a writing workshop at a college somewhere. And I was always like, I would really like to take a workshop with this guy, you know, and that definitely fed into how I eventually took a workshop with like Tom Spanbauer and like Skyped with him and all that stuff. And then like, I mean, it's hard to express how like long of a dream that is for me and how exciting that is for me. And so it was really nice. It felt kind of like karmic to come home and be like, you did this thing for other people that you couldn't fully participate in, and then this other good thing happened.
Like the universe sort of opened up to you.
Yeah, I had this, I'll read you the email. I had this email in my inbox from Lydia Yuknovich, who also I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote this book, The Chronology of Water, that like I cried while I was reading it.
The Chronology of Water, buy it on Amazon.com and in any reputable bookstore.
Yeah. So she says, hey, Helpful Snowman, you're in. Further information and instructions forthcoming. It would help to know your name at this point. You can contact me at her email address. Love, Lydia. Yes, I know this email says Andy, but it's me, Lydia, I swear, XOX. And it was just like,
I like how you both use some pseudonyms. Like there's a both little yeah. bit of like,
hers is from her husband's email. So I sent in a sample. You had to send in a 500 or less word sample.
Okay.
And I sent in this sample and just, you know, I attached no information to it because it didn't ask for any.
So the Helpful Snow fans out there
yeah.
want to know what sample you sent in.
Do you
want to
hear it? Because I have it right here. All right, I'll read it.
Okay.
Walgreens is the third store today, and it's not until the Walgreens makeup aisle that you figure out stores only sell cotton balls in large and jumbo. No small, not even a medium. You've got big, and you've got real big. I might as well tell you, I need cotton balls to put in my ass. I cough up a laugh. 3 years of anal leakage, you have to take the laughs where you can get them. 3 years doesn't make it real the way it does if I tell you I had a colonoscopy. Flexible sigmoidoscopy, biofeedback with a rectal probe a few times. Ever heard of a 3D defecography? Neither had I, neither has Spellcheck. I've had more fingers in me than a bowling ball. That's a joke I saw online, on a website where people like me write about their butthole problems. The joke's funnier when you've been leaking mucus and diarrhea into your jeans for a couple years. Give it some time. This afternoon was the fourth butt doctor I visited. You can always tell a butt doctor's office because there's something on the wall, a painting or a picture, and it's just above waist high. This butt doctor has a picture of dolphins. This butt doctor describes a procedure to me, how they'd inject something into my anus. I don't understand, and then he tells me it's what rich ladies do to their lips to puff them up. He might do that to my asshole, puff it up like Angelina Jolie. I liked that idea. Not as a procedure. Just that my asshole and rich lady lips would have something in common. I'll take the laughs where I can get them. This fourth doctor with the dolphin picture, he tells me that in the meantime I can shove a cotton ball in my ass. I laugh. I think it's a joke. He says, I'm serious. You have a bowel movement, stuff a cotton ball in there, then the next time you go, you just poop it out. Most of the jokes about this, they happened to me, but I made one of my own. I want to tell it to you. When I came out of the colonoscopy anesthesia, I told the nurse it was a shame we did this a few days after Mother's Day. I could have sent these colon pictures to my mom, I said. The nurse didn't think it was funny. There must be something that happens to your sense of humor when it's a regular thing to pull down your pants and your cheeks are smeared after someone squeezes a barium paste inside you to crap out on x-ray, after you stand in the third aisle with the only large and jumbo, after you hold the bag of large cotton balls in your hands, squeeze one ball against the plastic wrapper to see if it looks like it would fit in your ass. That's the sample. So, I mean, I saw that it was like an open thing. Mm-hmm. And then I'd applied last year and I wrote a thing that was kind of the last mining I did of the time you threw up in my car.
Oh, okay.
But it was like totally different.
Right.
But it was basically throwing up on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't get in that time. And so I was like, there was only like a 3-day window for this.
Right.
So I think it was like probably 11:30 at night. And I was like, I'm going to write up a thing and submit it tonight and just call it a day, you know, and then let it go. And so I did that and submitted it on, let's see, December 12th. And then it was like 2 weeks later on the 23rd that I heard I was in.
Mm.
And so I just kind of like wrote a thing, cut it down to the word count that was allowed, and then, and it worked.
Ooh.
So I kind of, I guess I went at it like, hey, you know, even if I don't get in, I'll have a little piece of writing that I can do something with later if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So getting into that was like a pretty big, exciting moment. But I think like the exciting moment is really going to the thing. Like the best day isn't, you know, it's like you're in a doctoral program, right?
Sure.
And like probably the best day isn't getting in as much as it's getting out.
Sure.
And like what you walk away with.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what I'm hoping for this too. But that's pretty high up there because that happened the same day as Santa Rampage for me.
Right.
And like getting an email from like, you know, one of your literary heroes and
getting... It was like that was an all around good day. Like,
it was a pretty solid day,
mm-hmm.
especially because like I had worked that day. I had pretty, that was like the most swollen, painful day as far as my gum surgery.
Right.
And so then I think it was like started from a real low point and came up to a pretty good peak.
Well, there's kind of a theme of your best days of like they start low and they go high.
It's true.
Like they can't like... Where you're like doing the Lucero concert in Memphis, in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And like it starts from a bad place and then goes to a really great place.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
this day is like a low place and goes to a really great place.
I think I'm a contrasty person because like, you know, without being too down about it, I think most of my days are kind of a lower place.
Right.
Unless something particular makes them not a lower place.
Well, it's kind of like if you had a scale of 1 to 10, like where 1 is terrible and
yeah,
10 is the best day ever.
Yeah.
Like most of your days are probably about a 4.
Yes, I'd say that's...
Like a 3 to a 4, like in yeah, that sort of like between those
low.
Two. And so like when it... So that's sort of like saying that when like a day peaks to a 7, like that's a good day.
It's pretty amazing to get like to a 7.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then... Yeah, I guess this is the advantage of being depressed.
Right.
The one advantage is that like even a pretty good day is like an amazing day.
It's the kind of thing as a non-depressed person.
Yeah.
Where I basically think of every Friday as a 7.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of it, like I don't have to go to work on Monday.
Right. Yeah, and for me it's not so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably my answer. I'd say that was like 5 days, maybe.
Right.
Because the 2 days I was for sure, and then the third that I was like, there's like a lot of... I mean, there's like 5 contenders for top 3.
Right.
And I would say 5 years from now, I'll know for sure.
Well, that like you don't have to say what it is forever and ever. Like, this is just in the last couple of hours before 2017 ends.
Yeah, I mean, then definitely Memphis and that. You know, I think like one of the sad things is I'm afraid that that day where we're just kind of lounging around will fade from my memory.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember being very content that day. And maybe that's like, as a sort of depressive person, not something I feel very often. So it's like super special for me to feel that way.
Well, part of it, that's why it's good to put it on a podcast.
Yeah, true. So I remember forever.
Yeah, but it's also a way of saying like, sometimes like the best thing of a year is not necessarily a thing that's going to carry on into future years. In that the way that a best book or a best movie or something else like of 2017 is not going to be something that matters in 30 or 40 years from now. In the way that like I would probably argue that the best movie of 2017 was Get Out.
Okay.
And I would like that Get Out seems like a weird artifact 30 years from now.
Yeah.
Like I would like that to be true.
Right, but it's like odds are
it's not going to be, but like I want like Get Out to be just such a like, what, why, I don't understand, like, yeah, I don't understand this,
what
thing
was going on,
like,
in
what was going on in 2017.
Well, like I think Your Wedding is kind of like that, because like I think it was just seeing you so happy that mm-hmm. made that great, but then you know, you getting married is potentially the beginning of that,
right?
So maybe that will fade in terms of like, well, maybe as a result of that union, he'll be even happier in the future. And so the actual wedding day will be less significant than.
Well, we've talked about a little bit, and this will get into like, you know, if you were to ask me the same question.
Yeah. Which I was like, do you want me to ask you the same question? I mean, cause you're going to have to say fucking wedding.
Like I, well, like,
like that would be crazy if you're like, let's see, one day, a whole bag of munchies. And my stomach didn't hurt at all.
I had a lot of Funyuns one day, and I played some Dead Space 3. Yeah, and it was pretty like, good.
You got married this year. So.
No, she already knows that's one of the best days, so that's pretty easy. But like one of the days we were talking about, actually, that I'm not surprised you didn't mention, but was like when one of my best days this year was probably when we came back to Greeley. And we did a sort of a barbecue, like where it was catered at our house, like at my mom's house. And like a lot of my friends came, a lot of your friends came.
Yeah.
And it was kind of just like a bunch of people hanging out at our house.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that we thought about was like, do we want to make that like a regular thing?
Yeah.
Like a sort of in the way that like if I had to pick some of my best days of the year, wedding day is obviously number one.
Right.
But honestly, like, I think of best days of my life, like, probably that day is pretty high up there on the list. Like,
okay.
Just.
I mean, it was nice. It was like almost all of your good friends. I think all of your good friends were there. And then.
Like, so many good friends that it would be hard to recreate that.
Yeah.
That even.
It's kind of like wedding, funeral, baby.
Right.
Like. You would basically have to commit to having a baby to make that happen again.
And it's the kind of thing of like, I felt it felt like it was exactly the right moment where people came together. They all had some food. They all hung out. Everyone was in a good mood too.
Yeah. There was no sourness to it.
Yeah. Like the godchildren were playing with chalk. The people who don't like kids were like saying, oh, the god, you know, like the little kids are out front. I'll be in backyard.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I think, you know, that doesn't go in my top just because I worked that day.
Right.
And also it was a little stressful because our mom was kind of like, they want to do this barbecue on this day, so you plan it.
Yes.
And I was like, what the fuck?
I think like our mom had realized like you were a really good party planner. And so that sort of came to your disadvantage at that moment.
Which I was totally fine with, but I was like, you got to fucking tell me this more than like 10 days.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't know it was that like.
It was pretty quick.
It was that quick.
Well, I think because like, if my recollection is correct,
right.
She really wanted to do this thing. And you guys were kind of like, eh, maybe. And then I think you and I had a conversation where I was like, I think our mom really wants to do this thing.
Right.
So if you're like as long as you're not opposed to it, you should probably do it.
Right.
Because I think she would consider this like wedding part two and mm-hmm. would feel really good about it. But so I think the whole thing was like, we did a lot of work.
Right.
And so like, it was fun and it turned out great. And I was glad everyone was so happy, but also it's hard for me to like right now, probably a year from now, I won't remember.
Right.
But like at this moment, it's hard for me to distance it from the like,
there's a
difference. We're having a party in like 9 days and like, what are people going to eat? Dido dough. You know, like, but you know, I mean, I think we did fine. Like we got a bunch of beer, we got, you know,
right.
barbecue, and ultimately it didn't matter. Like, I don't think anyone really came specifically for the beer or the food. It was like mm-hmm. to see you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. It was fun. And it was like, if I were in your shoes and that was happening, like I was seeing all my best friends and stuff, it would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean that's a real highlight of the year for me.
Yeah.
Like that's probably like my 1, 2, and 3 are actually pretty easy, where it's like 1 is wedding.
Yeah.
2 is the barbecue. Or like maybe like 2 might be 2 and 3 are kind of like mixed together, but like Christmas is probably pretty high on the list.
Yeah, it was a pretty good Christmas this year.
So like pretty similar.
Ian makes like
a
bunch of Moroccan food, his friends and his godson/
my godchildren.
Godchildren, I guess.
Yeah.
Come over and like, it's kind of chaotic, but it's fun. Our mom really enjoys having the little kids there
a lot. It's what we've described in the past as a grandma fantasy camp.
Yeah, basically. Like she has a day of grandma camp.
Right.
Where she just kind of plays with little kids and like reads them stories and shit. And
this year she had a hard time because she drank a whole bottle of wine by herself.
Yeah.
So she was super wasted.
Yeah, this year.
Like, but it's this year, like this was one, like, you know, Christmas was really good, and like, you know, Jen described it really well. It's like, it's really what Christmas should be.
Uh-huh.
It's like a way of like, there's a lot of warmth.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively, there's a lot of like people together.
Yeah.
You know, people eating, drinking, yeah. having a good time with each
other. Laughing. And it's not like highly structured.
No.
And there's not like a lot of gifting on actual Christmas.
Yeah. There's like Christmas is like a weirdly disorganized kind of thing,
yeah.
like in the right way. Like there's sort of a chaos that sort of emerges.
Yes.
Like, come to the table. Eventually you're going to eat something.
Yeah. Our mom is like, get these party poppers and shoot them directly into the food that we're going to eat every year.
Yes,
she's like, it's couscous time. And she gives everyone party poppers. And for some reason, everyone shoots them right into the bowl.
Right, like she gathers, like everyone is gathered around a table, and then like she makes sure to shoot party poppers like into the food.
It's a pretty amazing, you know, every year I'm like, and it's always the adults that do it.
Right.
It's never like the kids.
The kids are like, the kids know that something is off.
And the mother of your godchildren was like a little stoned.
Yes.
And said something of like mildly offensive. It would be offensive, but it wasn't. But it was just like about how one of her kids was special. And then she's like, not special like that, but like special. And then she was like, oh God, I'm high. Like,
yeah. She's like, my kid's a little special. Not special that way, but like the other special.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm high.
But it's okay to be special. Right. Oh God, I'm high. And everyone else is just like watching her like, what hole are you digging right now? And like, none of us were mad. We're just all like, when is she going to stop talking?
We're like, part of me is like, I want to see where this keeps going.
Yeah. But also like, you could stop at any time you want.
Like, I was like, this is great.
It was super awesome. I mean, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I mean, it wasn't as fun for me because I was in a pretty...
I'm in a tremendous
amount of physical pain.
Right.
And a medium amount of emotional pain.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the combo was really unpleasant.
But like Christmas was sort of like, it sounded like for you, like after getting the high of getting into the workshop, like it was a good sort of boot, like kept the momentum going, like the emotional momentum.
It gives me something to like really look forward to
because mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, like if you're a sort of depressive person, the question is always like, why get out of bed today?
Right.
And the question for me now has an answer for like 3 months, mm-hmm. which is a pretty solid thing. And like, I've got a lot of momentum for a couple months and, you know, that's really helpful for me.
Right.
And then I think like seeing other people's reaction to it, because they were like, this is huge and great, was helpful. Because it's like living the life that I live, I don't get a lot of validation mm-hmm. for the things that I do, you know, like writing stuff and like, I mean, this obviously, like, I don't have a lot of people like crowding around to tell me like, oh, this is so great, you know.
You don't have a lot of people crowding around monetarily at Patreon.
No.
So
feel free to do that.
Yeah. So if you don't already donate to the Helpful Snowman Patreon, you should. Mm. And if you already do, make it your New Year's resolution to encourage your friends to go to Patreon, find Helpful Snowman, and get your friends to donate.
Yeah, I think it's worth your time.
Yeah, maybe you should make it like a pledge drive or something.
Maybe I should.
The Helpful Snowplow?
The Helpful Snowplow.
Right.
And I try and make a certain amount of pledges.
Mm-hmm. You got to get like 3 new Patreons.
I think I was just looking to sort of break even. Mm-hmm. And I think right now I'm making like $20 a month.
Hey.
So I think that does almost break me even. Provided I don't have to buy any equipment or anything.
Right.
I mean, like if I have to buy a new laptop, I'm wiped out for like 5 years.
Sure. But you just bought a new laptop, so you're good.
I should be fine for at least a couple more
years. You're good, Mr. Laptop. You're good.
Yeah. You're solid.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that like getting into a workshop like that with like a recognizable name and something that was a competitive process is something other people understand.
Right.
And like understand as being like a validation of like, oh, this person that, you know, this person I know like has some kind of something.
Mm-hmm.
So that it was nice.
Right. So what was the question? What were the questions you had for me?
Wait, was that your only question? Your top 3 days or whatever?
I had another question, but yeah, I wanted to alternate.
Do it.
What is the thing that is in 2017 that you would like to see continue into 2018?
So like kind of like what's going, do you mean like more
like what's good now?
Wide-ish? Not for me so much.
Why don't we go with what is for you and then a worldwide one?
Okay.
Or like a you and then not you.
I mean, in all seriousness, I think my relationship with Poon Master Flex is really great.
Okay.
And like we really enjoy each other's company.
So you're saying that you'd like to see 2018 have your relationship continue?
I guess.
Yes.
I mean, I think that like I would just like to... there's no way in which I'd like to see it change.
Right.
Which I think for relationships is not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of people who are like, I would change this or that about my relationship, and right. I would literally change nothing about my relationship other than we wouldn't live in different states. But,
right. Like you had talked in a previous episode about like wanting to do something about looking up information about long distance relationships.
Oh God. Yeah, we can talk about that later, but I looked up like products and things that like, oh, this is great for a long distance relationship, and none of it works.
We should do a part 3 because I have been in 2 long distance relationships.
Yeah, and like it doesn't work great.
No.
And I blame this on the fact that like most long distance relationships end.
Well, yeah, relationships end.
But, well, and that's the thing is everyone's like, most long distance relationships don't work out. And I'm like, you could just take out the long distance part, right? Most relationships don't work out. I mean, statistically, I think I've been in like 7-8 relationships.
Sure.
And one of them has worked.
Like one of them is working, right?
That's a pretty shitty ratio.
I mean, I'll say this as a married man with my ring on and everything else.
Yeah.
And I take the approach of not saying like one relationship has worked.
Right.
I say like one relationship is working.
Yeah.
And the idea of like every relationship is going to require effort and it's going to require work. It's not like it's done.
Right. You know, yeah. So there's like, no point where you're like, oh, this is, we completed it. We did it.
It's not like you get to the British Baking Show thing of like, oh, the showstopper's there and Paul Hollywood and, you know, Mary Berry have evaluated it. And like
oh, success.
Your relationship is great. It's well baked.
Yeah.
The frosting is good, and I like the little tray you put it on.
But it is like the Great British Baking Show in that it's like, and then you do it again next week.
Right.
And you start all over.
You start from nothing.
So, like, I think that our relationship is really good, and I would like to see it continue being good. And, like,
sure.
As hard as it was, like, Dizzy dying was terrible, and there's no goodness to it. But I was able to see that something that I value in my relationship and value about Poon Master Flex is I like that she can be so goofy. And I've kind of like equated goofiness with intimacy.
Right.
Because I think that like if you're able to be goofy with someone and they're able to be goofy with you, that's like a good sign of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until that kind of went away, because, you know, neither of us were feeling goofy, that I was like, oh, this is something that I really value about being together.
Right.
And so...
Well, it's that you felt like your relationship was not reduced in hard times.
Well, yeah, and like, you know, neither of us felt goofy or felt like being goofy.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, I could see that this was like a temporary part of our relationship. And that I'm happy that I have someone I can be goofy with.
Yeah.
And is goofy with me.
There you go.
So I would like to see our relationship continue basically as it is.
All right,
I mean, so and then worldwide, like yes. Larger.
Well, maybe,
Trump forever. Trump 2020. Is that the 20, next election?
Like 2020 is the next election. So basically, you would like to say to
keep making America great.
And then you lost like part of
end
your
of
audience.
Show.
Yeah. Down. So either you're getting a whole bunch of new fans. We'll just post this on the Donald subreddit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew.
The whole world. Or maybe not the whole world, but like the world beyond yourself.
I think there's kind of a groundswell, and like maybe this is a message I could put out to the world too.
Okay.
Where I think the last year has allowed a lot of us to divide things one way or the other.
Right.
And make it seem like there's no middle ground in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that like the last year I've sort of opened myself to a lot of opportunities to hear about the middle ground.
Sure.
And I think there are a lot more people that are in the middle than you think. Like, I think the middle feels very lonely. But in reality, the middle is where almost everybody is. And so, like, I guess, like, I see a trend of, I think more people than not are, like, empathetic and understanding of other people. Mm-hmm. And that we're sort of being fed this idea that, like, you're with us or against us, you know. You love the new Ghostbusters movie or you're anti-woman.
Right.
You you either voted for Hillary Clinton or you're a racist, sexist.
Well, in fairness, you voted for Hillary Clinton or you voted for a Russian agent.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if someone said, like, well, if you didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, you voted for Russia, you'd be like, that's kind of fair.
Well, to be honest, I don't think at this point
like
someone being a Russian agent explicitly would exclude them from my voting possibilities.
And, like, you didn't vote for Russia. You just happened to have voted for Russia.
I happened to vote for the 66.6% of candidates who had
like
a Russian
affiliation. I made a search like, of the three choices. I picked like the one. Like, I picked one of the two that Russia liked.
Yes. But also, I think that, like, you know, I think that we've been very set up against each other in this way. But then I think over 2017, I've seen a trend of, like, people kind of expressing the middle point.
Right.
And a lot of the things that I've felt like I've read that were interesting expressed maybe I should say it as more individualistic views.
Mm-hmm.
Like I read, you know, our sister linked me to an interview with Aziz Ansari, and he was talking about, he's like, gave up the internet. And he's like, I don't read fucking shit on the internet anymore. And of course the interviewer was like, what the fuck? Like, how are you informed? And he's like, when something big happens, 10 people tell me about it. Like, I don't need to be... He compared it to wrestling. He's like, it's like watching pro wrestling. You know, you're watching these people yell at each other. You're watching a bunch of showmanship and da-da-da-da. And he's like, I'm not choosing to be ignorant. I'm choosing to not watch wrestling. And he's like, you can always find out what happened in a match afterwards.
Right.
And you don't have to find out exactly what everyone said about everyone else. And I thought that that was like, that really summed up how I felt, which is like, I think a lot of people, I think we're led to believe that a lot of people, you know, based on your beliefs or how you choose to conduct yourself, will hate you.
Mm-hmm.
Or be like, you're choosing to be ignorant, or you're turning a blind eye, or, you know, the other side is like, why don't you care about America? You know what I mean? And the truth is, almost everyone's somewhere in the middle.
Right.
And so I think that, I think I'd like to see a continued trend where we recognize that more people are not on one side or the other, but are individuals about things. There are a lot more people who, like, let's say, voted for Trump and loved their Mexican neighbor. And there are a lot more people who voted for Hillary Clinton, but also are, like, financially conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, like, voted for Hillary Clinton, but
they go to, like, their
like a Christian church plan. Every yeah. week. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are a lot more people who occupy, like...
It's not really a middle ground, but like there's a series of compromises.
Yeah, like I would like to see more people. I think about boxes because like Tom Spanbauer, when we worked together, always talked about unboxing things.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd say a term like it's cold outside and he'd be like, you need to unbox that. So what does that mean? Like, what does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that smell like? And I think that we like to box people. I'm drunk.
Right.
But, like, we like to box people and say, like, but what we like to do right now is have two boxes. Not me or, like, with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, like, Trump voter, not me. Hillary Clinton voter, with me. You know what I mean? And I guess I'd like to see an increased trend in not trying to put everyone into the two boxes we have, but increasing the number of boxes that we have. So, in other words, like, I can have a box that's, like, people I can get along with at work who don't agree with me politically.
Right.
That's a box. People who voted for Trump don't have to be in the racist box. People who voted for Hillary Clinton don't have to be in the, like, delusional, old school feminism box. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, these people can have their own individual boxes, and then basically it becomes, I have as many boxes as I do people. And so there's no use to having the boxes anymore.
All right. So you're kind of looking forward to, like, hoping for a 2018 with fewer boxings.
I think I'm just looking for, like, everything to be more spectrum-ish mm-hmm. and less well, with us or against us.
It's kind of a thing, like, when I was in, I read a thing in grad school about, like, the idea of having a crystallized self.
Yeah.
Like, where you're not one thing and then another thing. Like, yeah. It's not one or the other.
Yeah.
It's more like people have multiple faces.
Yes.
And it's not like multiple layers like an ogre or an onion.
Right.
But it's like the idea of like you have some faces you show and some faces you don't show.
Yeah.
And understanding that more people are not like you can't put them into boxes, but understanding that more people are sort of crystallized and that not many of us are one thing.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is I think very few of us are one thing.
Right.
Like, I think there are, I keep going back to it, but I think there are a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump who voted for him than reasons other than they're racist.
Sure.
Like, I think that that's an undeniable truth. And also, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice by pretending that, you know, by being like, well, everyone who voted for him is a racist, because then it's like, okay, well, what are we going to do next time?
I mean, the harder question to say is like, did everyone who is racist vote for Donald Trump? Mind blown.
I mean,
because the answer is really no. Like, there's a lot of people on the left who are also,
yes,
like, kind of racist. So,
I mean, I read this really good article, and it was just basically about a county in Iowa where it was super heavy tilted towards Barack Obama twice, and then super heavy tilted towards Donald Trump. And so you're like, I mean, how do you quantify that as racism? You know, it's pretty hard to be like, these guys are super racist because they voted for a black man twice and then a guy who's racist the third time. And they made a lot of good arguments. Like, the Democratic Party there was kind of like, we did a terrible job, and like,
we didn't have enough support. Like,
well, and one of the guys was like, Barack Obama completely saved the country from like total financial meltdown. And he's like, I acknowledge that. Like, I think he completely saved us from a terrible financial crisis and pulled us out of it. However, that did not make it to the middle class. And like, the middle class here is saying, we make the same wage and we're working 50 or 60 hours a week. And like, our wages have been stagnant, if not reduced, because our health insurance cost goes up. And so a lot of these people are like, I don't want a Washington insider. I don't want business as usual. I want something different.
It's a fair point to say that that's not why they voted for Donald Trump this time. If they vote for Donald Trump a second time.
Sure.
Given the way like that, not to get political on Helpful Snowman, given the way the tax bill has come out, it would be harder for them to say that like in 2020 to be like, I wanted something different.
Yeah.
Like, if they wanted something different, then they should vote for who, like, somebody else, anybody else.
I think that a lot, you know, I think that,
like, if they vote for Donald Trump again, that's where the vote for racism kind of comes. I'm not saying that that's what it is, but, like, that becomes a little more clear.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this is conflated because, like, yeah, not to get too political on this show, I think the Democrats ran a candidate who was very problematic in some very, in some ways that conservative / liberal voters are sensitive to. In other words, like, I think, I read Ted Rawls' blog, and he was kind of like, Hillary Clinton looks like, Richard Nixon. He's like, basically, the Democratic candidate has become the conservative candidate of, like, the 60s or the 70s. And he's like, she's a war hawk and da-da-da-da. And I'm like, he's not wrong.
Right.
So I think that, like, the thing is, it's hard for me to, like, really come down on a Trump voter because I feel that, I feel their other option wasn't great. I feel it was better.
Right.
Let's not confuse that. But I feel like their other option was not, it wasn't Barack Obama.
Their other option was not obvious.
Yeah, and it's not like it was, oh God.
Is what you're saying.
Who's that senator?
Bernie Sanders?
Elizabeth Warren.
Sure.
I think if she had run, we would have seen something really different. I think if Bernie Sanders had been the primary candidate, he would have won in a landslide.
And then it would have been like Donald Trump populist, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, Donald Trump would have won a vote on hardcore conservatives. But, you know, this like this very this
that would have been like where Donald Trump won the hardcore racist and conservative vote.
Yeah,
like exactly. Not
which wouldn't have
racist,
been the,
like,
the majority.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's like I think the thing is Donald Trump. He absolutely won the conservative racist vote.
Right.
But he also won a lot of votes that aren't that. And so, you know, let's just sum this all up.
Sure.
I just want to see more people come towards the middle and be like, everyone's not my enemy who's different from me.
I guess my hope for 2018 is I want to see more people come towards, I don't want to say the middle. Because I feel like the middle is like the idea between two positions. Like if you go to something else.
Yeah, I don't mean like the exact middle.
Right.
I just mean not the polls.
Not the polls. But I'm going to, I will go a little bit more contemporary and saying, like, if you're weighing between, like, banned from the mall and not banned from the mall.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, it's because in the Senate, like in the Alabama Senate election.
Yeah.
Like Roy Moore was banned from the mall.
Like a shopping mall?
Yeah. Like he was not allowed to go into the shopping mall because he was, it was too likely that he would molest kids.
Why?
Because he had some issues with dating, quote unquote, 14-year-olds. Mm-hmm. But like he was actually banned from the shopping mall. Like that was sort of a plea agreement or something like that. Like he was banned from going to the shopping mall.
Okay.
Where his Democratic opponent said, like, Doug Jones not banned from the shopping
Which
mall.
Which was so confusing because I kept seeing Doug Jones on Twitter and thought it was the guy who does all the mocap for movies.
No.
And then I'd click on it and it was
That's
all this
Andy
political
Serkis,
stuff.
You son
no,
of a
there's
bitch.
A Doug Jones.
Okay.
Hold on. Hold on. Doug Jones, I think, was like, I'm pretty sure he was Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies.
Oh, he was the actor part?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, as a good 2017 wrap-up, if you have not seen Shape of the Water, go see it. In the theater, really good.
There you go. Doug Jones, Hellboy 2, Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy. Okay.
Oh, he was the Mac Tonight guy.
Okay.
Like, was he... He was one of the monsters in it.
He's basically been in like 90% of movies since.
Like, if you see his IMDb credits,
97.
Like, so he might have been the Mac Tonight guy.
Hocus Pocus, Three Kings, Buffy, The Time Machine, Men in Black 2, Hellboy.
Yeah, so he might have
Doom.
Been.
Pan's Labyrinth, Lady in the Water. Dukes of Hazzard, Fantastic Four, Silver Surfer. Hellboy 2, Quarantine. I mean, he's like in everything.
Okay, so he was the I think there's an interview with him on another podcast, Battleship Pretension.
Uh-huh.
Where like he was like his acting debut was as Mac Tonight.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like but yeah, like I think he was the guy like in Pan's Labyrinth who was the eyeball guy. Like
yes,
the guy
yes.
with his hands in his eyes.
Exactly. He's played like a lot of monsters, and he was Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies.
Like
and
he
whatever.
Was the body of Abe Sapien, and like David Hyde Pierce.
Yeah. So when I saw Doug Jones trending all the time, I'd be like awesome, and then I would click on it and be like, "What is this bullshit?"
Like disappointed.
Yeah. What is this crap?
Right.
Even though Doug Jones, there's got to be 50,000 people named Doug Jones.
But the Alabama Senate race was a weird thing where one guy who's banned from the mall because he has a hard time like not having sex with people who are underage.
Yeah.
You know, barely lost to somebody whose major career claim to fame was prosecuting members of the Klan.
Well, see, this is the thing, like, too, because I get in trouble at work whenever I talk about politics, because everyone was, like, celebrating, like, this Roy Moore guy rode a horse to the polls. What an idiot, you know? And I was like, this guy lost, right? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, who cares about him? Like, why are we still fighting this guy who lost? Like, he's gone.
Yeah.
Let's stop talking about him. He's done. He's gone.
The
heroes won.
I would still say until Roy Moore concedes, follow the Twitter account Roy Moore's Horse.
I just like
that's mostly because it's funny.
Can I tell you like something I hated about 2017?
All right, you get one thing you hated about 2017 because we've done a lot of optimism.
I felt like when I was in let's say like 2004.
Okay,
I was a hardcore liberal.
All right.
And like, you know, I read all of Michael Moore's books and like all that stuff and was really into it and really into politics. And like, I hated George W. Bush.
Right.
And was so mad that like, you know, Al Gore conceded the election to him, even though he won the popular. It's very similar to this last election.
Right.
Because Al Gore won the popular vote, but didn't win because our system is dumb. And then was super mad this time because I was like, did nobody pay attention to last time how this went down? And like, why haven't we fixed this in the, you know, decade that went by? And like at that time, I guess I just felt like the sort of left-wing party was like the party of inclusion. mm-hmm. and the party that felt like everyone deserves respect and like everyone deserves basic human rights and we should just basically treat everyone well. And like, even if someone we don't like or who's against us, we should treat them well. Like, the way we win this battle is by like treating everyone like a human being. Like, do I hate George Bush? Do I think he's a shitty president? Yes. Do I think I should like, do I want to see him assassinated? No.
It's the kind of thing like Ted Rall wrote in the Bernie Sanders book.
Yeah.
Like, where Bernie Sanders, like, George Bush is a, like, George W. Bush is a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Really good family man.
Right.
You know, really nice person to hang out with. He was one of the worst presidents in history.
Absolutely.
And like, the second part is way more relevant than the first part.
Yeah, it is. But like, do I want him to die?
No. Right.
I don't. Like, I don't. I don't. Do I want to see him like beheaded on TV? No. And like, and I guess I just felt like the Liberal Party when I was young was about dignity. Mm-hmm. And like, everyone deserves dignity. And I feel like right now I've been sort of left out of that party because I don't feel like it's that way anymore. Like, I feel like the party I once identified with is now full of people who are sort of frothing to take the opportunity because they're like, this guy's a huge asshole, so basically I can say whatever mean thing I want about him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay. It's like acceptable to basically mock this guy. So, like, for example, we mock him because his hair is dumb, because he's bald. But I'm like, isn't this why we don't mock people? Because it's like, it's not about hurting that guy. It's about the other bald guy who's like, right. Oh, that hurts my feelings. Or like, we make fun of him for being fat. And it's like, it's okay because he's a huge asshole. But I'm like, don't we not make fun of fat people? Because we're like, well, there's a lot of other fat people who don't feel good when they see you mocking a fat person.
There's a weird thing about the people who are simultaneously mad about, like, Donald Trump being a puppet for the rich,
uh-huh.
mocking him for taping his tie down.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like the, you know, you can let go of some of those, like, de class A things.
Yeah.
If it means, well, I mean, there's a difference of like part of it is like if you're sort of day class A, but also like working for the rich, like that yeah. would be a, but that would be an argument I accept. It's like he's not of the rich, but he seems to work for them. Like he's of
but
the
in
money
that case,
class,
he's kind of a victim. I mean, he's really a victim, and in what and if someone's a victim, I don't feel good like mocking them.
I don't feel good mocking them interpersonally, but when they're the president, where you're like. You're a patsy.
See, and this is like, the thing, is I think say, everyone's like, he's the president, he's a public figure, so fuck him, he's fat and ugly and orange.
Right.
And I'm like, listen, I thought the whole thing we were going with here was like, we don't make fun of people who have, you know, weight issues, because when I make fun of Donald Trump for having a weight issue, someone else who has a weight issue hears that.
Well, it's
like I can't sequester that
right.
and be like, I'm only making fun of him for that, not you.
It's the idea that a lot of people have that comedy is supposed to be about punching up.
Yeah.
But really a lot of comedy is about normalizing. Where it's, in other words, like if someone is a little fat or doesn't put tape on their ties or like they have all their hair, that's supposed to be normal.
Yeah.
And so it's like the idea of... most comedy is supposed to be about punching up. Like, most satire is supposed to be about punching up, but it's really about, like, saying what is normal. And when someone's not normal, it feels like it's okay to punch them, even though, like, that's not really good.
Well, and I think that, like, I guess I just feel that...
Also, Donald Trump is still an asshole. We all are all in agreement on that here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like him. I'm not defending Donald Trump. What I'm defending is, like, when we make fun of him for being, like, a fat, orange piece of shit.
Right.
It's like, don't we have, like, more legitimate reasons for making fun of him than him being fat? I mean, don't we have, like, if he's really so bad, Can't we talk about why he's so bad about his, like, chosen actions as opposed to his body type?
If you want to make a statement in 2017 about, like, Charlottesville both sides,
yeah,
by all means, go nuts. He did that on purpose. Or, if not on purpose, like, he should have known better.
Yeah.
But, yeah, him being fat, kind of not his fault.
It's hitting below the belt.
Right.
And it's like, it's also, I think that what I'm saying is like, I see that as like something that the people I used to identify would do with a lot.
Right.
And now I have a hard time identifying with those people because I think when I identified with those people before, it's like, it would be like if you depicted George Bush as like, also he's short. And you're like, well, I don't think that making fun of short men is really productive. And
right.
Also, I think him being short is like number 55 on the list of his bad things he's done.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I think that like if Donald Trump is so horrible, let's mock him for the things he's done by choice, not for what his body looks like. Because he, what is he like in his late 60s?
70s.
I mean, how fucking fuckable is someone in their 70s in general?
Well, he landed Melania somehow.
As somebody in his 70s, Donald Trump does not look, A, bad, and B, has a much more attractive spouse than most people in their 70s.
So what we're saying for 2018, what we would all like what Helpful Snowman would like, is mock Donald Trump for his policies and also for his likely midterm losses.
Well, let's call it his choices.
Right.
Mock him for his choices. Policies, not his, like,
policies
genetic
are
hand.
Policies are choices.
Yeah. And it just, like, it was frustrating for me because I felt that in the party of inclusion that I once felt very strongly connected with, I feel like has gone to the party of exclusion. It's like, unless you feel like Donald Trump is not only bad, but ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you're willing to be like, if I'm as a person, I'm willing to say like, I don't think Donald Trump is like a hideous human physically.
Mm-hmm.
And like is pretty normalized for someone in their 70s. Like, I don't think he looks particularly bad. And I feel like people who I once identified with are like, you can't say anything positive about Donald Trump. Like, okay, let me put it like this. I remember when Oliver Stone made that movie W.
Right.
And he took a boatload of shit. Because I think people were like, why didn't you stick it to him? And I think Oliver Stone, like when I watched that movie 2 times, like right in a row, because we showed it for a film night at the library. And I was like, I think Oliver Stone's thing here was like, this is a dude who was not a bad human, who was in way over his head. And did not realize that until it was way too late. And, like, we shouldn't excuse him for the results of that. And he'll probably go down in history as one of the worst presidents ever. And I would still say he's way worse than Donald Trump. Because I'm like, well, he got us involved in a war that has resulted in how many deaths since then that is still happening?
Right.
Like, it is not over. That's crazy. I mean, it's been, like, 15 plus years of constant warfare, and like we're all just like, whatever, Donald Trump is the worst because he won't let like transgender people in the military. And I'm like, what about all these deaths on his head, you know, both American and Afghani and Iraqi?
Mm-hmm.
And like Syrian, da da da. But he took a boatload of shit because I think he presented George W. Bush as like a sympathetic character. And I can, like, see him as a sympathetic character because I do think I can construct a reality where, like, George W. Bush was in over his head. Like, he wanted to be president because who the fuck doesn't want to be president at some point in their life?
He was from a family that would have encouraged that.
It was possible.
Right.
And so, like, I think most of us, despite what we would think, if we were in a family where your dad was president, and they were like, you know, you have a decent shot. If you took a run at it, you could be the president. I think a lot of us would like to think we wouldn't do that or would seriously consider it. But I think most of us would do it.
I mean, I think like you and I both like don't have the, we don't like, one of the things that we don't really understand emotionally is our, this will get super deep here on,
okay,
this thing. We don't have the, we don't have the perspective of our dads encouraging us to do something.
No.
Yeah.
My dad, I remember him encouraging me if I used a condom not to put it in over the condom up to my balls.
Right.
Because then the condom doesn't work.
Like that was...
Which you're like, are you saying you had an oops baby?
Right.
And am I that oops baby? Like, what are you... Well, this spoiler, is not encouraging.
Spoiler alert from some previous episodes, but actually you were an
Peter
oops baby.
Peter was an oops baby to an extent.
All right. Was he the only oops Dirk baby? You decide.
Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, I just, let's wrap this all up.
All right, so we'll wrap this up.
I just want to say, like, I'm hoping that people will come more towards the center.
Mm-hmm.
And I also would like to see the party that I once identified with become less exclusionary and more like... I would like to see it as a party that like is floating on its own merits as right. opposed to saying how shitty the other party is.
Maybe for 2018, you say you want a party that is floating on its own merits, responsive to its local issues.
Yeah.
Also, Helpful Snowman does not necessarily endorse one party over another, but it does want you to vote in 2018. Vote for someone. Because you're voting for your representatives.
Oh, in 2018? Yes, in 2018.
Like, it's a midterm election. It is your representatives, your local people.
Yeah.
It is the people who will affect your life the most.
Well, and I would say, like, I'm supportive of an abstentive vote.
Right.
Provided that you've, like, looked at the options and you're like, neither of these options represent me, so I'm not voting. I'm not supportive of the abstention vote in that you're just like, oh, fuck it, who has the time to figure this out? But if you're like, I don't endorse either of these, I don't think someone has to vote because they're like, well, this is slightly better than that. This is 51%. This is 49%.
I will take a different endorsement tactic and say, like, vote in your school board elections, vote in your state legislature elections. Vote in those smaller elections that actually do affect you.
I would actually take a different tack on that and say, like, could someone who's sane run for an office? I mean, we had two options for, like, I think it was mayor.
Right.
And we had two options. One was basically some shithead who's, like, been on the city council and is basically... interwoven in government in such a way where you're like, well, all of his decisions are being made with someone with their hand up his ass, and a lunatic who sells newspaper subscriptions at King Soopers. Like, those were our choices. And you're like, okay, so I basically have business as usual times 1,000, or I guess shake it up times 1,000, but like, I'm not entire. There's nothing that qualifies this person to do this job at all. It would be worse than if I ran, and I have no confidence in my ability in politics.
It is not saying that. It's sort of like you could have everything stay the same and be worse, like more solidified, or blow it all up.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
It's kind of like you're in a plane that's going down, and you're like, well, do I just stay with this plane and crash it into the ground? Or full speed.
Right.
Or do I jump out and just fall to the ground and also die?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like a good choice and a slightly bad choice. It's like two shitty choices that have the exact same result.
So maybe the more consistent choice for a Helpful Snowman is don't march, run.
Yeah, I think so.
Like saying, if you're able to run for an office, you should do that.
Yeah, like, if you're sane and you want to run for mayor, like, do it. Just fucking do it. Like, it's not going to cost you as much as you think.
So, basically, what you're saying is, if you wanted a scientist in office, right?
Yes. I voted for many a third-party scientist.
Many a third-party scientist. So, really, what you're saying is, we at Helpful Snowman, like, in the Helpful Snowman fan base, we're waiting for Darren Roberts
Yeah, I would vote Darren Roberts.
Darren Roberts, you know, 2018.
Yeah.
2020.
Any office.
2022, 2024.
Fuck it. Forever.
We don't know where your citizenship is, Darren Roberts.
Darren Roberts and then just an infinity sign.
Right. Wherever you happen to be, we will vote for you. Maybe not for voter fraud.
But,
hey.
I mean, at this point, I'd vote for someone who passed a science class in college.
That's true.
And doesn't have, like, a rich dad who probably paid for that.
Awesome. So, Peter's running to the bathroom right now. He's trying to figure out how to pee again. So, I think that I will sit here and talk about a little bit what I'm looking forward to in 2018. You know, 2017 was really good for me, so I'd like my marriage to continue. That would be very good. Hey, Jen. Love you, babe. I think for other things I'd like for 2018, well, you know, one of the things I will have to say is that I am a huge Mega Man fan, and I like the idea that in spring 2018, Mega Man 11 is coming out. Odds are good that digitally stimulated 5 or 6 will be all about Mega Man, so, you know, you should look forward to that in 2018 as well. Other things that I really want to see continue in 2018. Yeah. I'm looking forward to Black Panther. That's coming out pretty early on. I'm hoping that will be good. So I'm hopeful there. I think that I've had friends who ask me about new Star Wars movies coming out in 2018. I think they will be marginal. Probably not great. I think they will be kind of a continuation of a brand more than making and telling good stories. And so I think that's not really what I'm looking forward to in 2018. Midterm elections will happen. If I'm going to say this here on Helpful Snowman, I'm going to guess that the House it changes hands and the Senate probably stays the same. It will be interesting to see a couple of special elections come up and those kinds of things, but I really don't think that much will change politically. I think that Donald Trump will continue to limp along. It will be kind of the same as it was this year, barring some major differences.
I never know what you say when you're, like, vamping. Some ways, like, I should listen to that back, and then I don't remember.
Then you just completely, like, leave that there.
You said you had one other, like, very 2017 question for me.
Oh.
Had something to do with publishing or something.
Oh, yeah. I think that maybe that would be good for a part 3.
Well, okay. Should we end this now and do part 3?
I think so, because it's a good way to make multiple episodes.
It was me and Dizzy.
Dizzy, rest in power.
Us against the world. She was like the stars at night. I was falling from the sky. Lucky just to be alive. Me and my girl. It was 1999.